Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at WesleyFinancialGroup.com. Once again, WesleyFinancialGroup.com. Hickster, what do you got for me?
Well, Z Man, before we look ahead to Game 5, let's go back to Friday night where the Nuggets took a commanding 3-1 lead over the Heat, as now they are one win away from the franchise's first championship ever. Now, that Game 4 win was on the backs of Aaron Gordon and Bruce Brown, who combined to score 48 points in the win. Now that Denver's up 3-1, in NBA Finals history, teams that are up 3-1 are 35-1 all time, the only one being, of course, 2016, Cavaliers come back to take down the Warriors. Nuggets in this game, 8.5-point favorites. Onsides or offsides, the Nuggets will win Game 5 and cover the 8.5-point spread.
I like them to win the game. I did not pick a side here on the gambling part of it because there is a fear of me that everyone says Denver's going to win tonight. So you may as well look at the 8.5 points and take them with the Miami Heat and some books up to 9.5 as well. And maybe Miami surprises and gets one here and kind of, you look at it and you go, okay, should Denver be nervous? Are they going to see Game 7? Will they close it out in Game 6? I do think Denver will win, but if you made me make a gambling play on this game, I would actually plus the points with the Miami Heat. So Denver will win, but they won't cover is the way that I will answer the questions. You asked me, will Denver win the game and cover? Since the latter one, I do not have them covering, I will go offside.
Offside!
Help is reportedly on the way for the Miami Heat tonight.
If you want to call that help.
Tyler Hero.
You're down 3-1.
Well, in terms of maybe keep the spread close then for tonight and saying it's going to be a close game, that could help as well, as Tyler Hero will be active for the first time
looking
since
to be the hero.
Miami
the pun's
is
right
for
there. Come
oh,
on.
I figured I'd save it, you know. Not going to be that cringeworthy.
Ba-dum-bum. Trust me, you're very cringeworthy to start with.
Miami looking for a hero, and they have gotten one. Tyler will be active for the first time since game one of the opening round of the playoffs against the Bucks. Now, in the regular season, Hero has led the team in three-point makes, three-point attempts, and three-point shooting percentage. And the timing cannot be better because, boy, oh, boy, Miami has gone dry from three. The last two games, coincidentally, both losses, just 19 of 60 from three. Woof. All right, onsides or offsides? Tyler Hero will score at least 20 points tonight.
We don't know how many minutes he's going to play, but he is reportedly back after breaking his right hand. If you remember some of the earlier reporting in this series, it was, oh, maybe he'll play in game three. They feel pretty good about game three. And then it was actually, well, if they lose game one, I would expect him to play in game two. Game two happened, didn't play. Game three happened, didn't play. Game four happened, didn't play. That's clear that hand injury is still impacting him significantly. So there's one thing to play. There's another thing to be effective. He had a few shots okay. To get to 20 points, yeah, I don't see that one. So I will go offside.
Offside.
Now, it's kind of crazy where you look at Gabe Vincent, you look at Max Strus, and you look at Duncan Robinson, how much we just expected them to show up. Those three guys going MIA, the fact that we're even in this position where we could go, they're the reason why, and one of the biggest reasons why Miami's going to lose this NBA Finals. It's bizarre to say just because you would have never thought that before this postseason. But since we are here and you got to see the difference from game one to game two, those guys showed up in game two. They won the game, even though they had to sweat it out when Jamal Murray lines up for that three-point attempt at the end of game two, and it just does not go in. But ever since then, games three, games four, game five, what the heck, or you know, game five tonight, but what the heck happened in games three and four with Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, and then Duncan Robinson as well? The three of those guys, they've been MIA in games three and four.
And if you want to get even more crazy, how about Caleb Martin, who even a month ago, no one's really talked about a ton as a big key as well. And he has gone dry this entire finals. And we're talking about four guys that probably in March, most people didn't know about or care about. And now those could be they are the reasons why the Heat could be losing in the finals.
I hate to say it, the Caleb Martin one isn't surprising. Just because it felt as if he peaked in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like that was his apex, where he outplayed, and you could make the argument, should have won the MVP trophy, the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, and it ended up going to Jimmy Butler in the slimmest of margins, 5-4. I kind of expected him not to have a big NBA Finals just because, talking about overachieving, I thought he overachieved in the Eastern Conference Finals, and he's come back down to earth. But you're not wrong in terms of another name that no one thought we'd be talking about before this postseason, where he is relied upon by this Miami Heat team. And I don't want to, the way I'm going to say it takes away credit from what Miami has done, but it's clear this Miami Heat team, they had a great run, but they do have a limit on how far they could go. And now we've seen this Heat team with Jimmy Butler twice get to the finals, and in all likelihood they're going to lose this finals. They could get there, but they still need another player to get them over the hump. And it feels like for all these other guys that we talk about, they embodied the Heat culture and their grittiness and their toughness in the NBA Finals. Midnight has struck for Cinderella. That's just the best way to put it. Those guys have done a remarkable job this postseason, but the Max Strus's of the world, the Gabe Vincents, the Duncan Robinsons, the Caleb Martins, you don't win an NBA championship with those guys playing an enormous role for your team. They're supposed to be an added luxury. But on this Heat team, they've become an enormous part of the team. And that's why they're not going to win a championship. They need Dame Lillard. They really do.
That they do. That would be a nice little fit down there in South Beach.
I don't know how you get it done, but I'm not the GM. I'm not Pat Riley. And if I suggested it, Pat Riley would tell me to go do some push-ups probably.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about it. That was last year, right?
Yeah. Oh, you forgot about it. It's your defining moment in radio, you doing those 40-something push-ups.
I forgot
push-ups.
How he got there. That is right.
Pat Riley was the one that was issuing the challenge. And then Hickey said, okay, I could do some push-ups.
Take that, Pat.
And then even though your form was skeptical, you were able to hammer out 41.
Let's talk some football.
Suspect, I think, goes the word. I would not skeptical.
The video's out there. I would argue against...
Oh, you calling my mother a liar?
Any questions about form and technique and maybe... Not cheating, but maybe milking it, I would personally disagree.
After like 20-something, you had bad form. And then Ike Feldman, who fights, he's like, he does some UFC fighting. And he's had some actual fights, who used to work here at CBS Sports Radio. He said your form was horrendous as well.
I think he's just a hater. He saw the push-ups.
He's not a
hater. You know what? Let me just take a dump on this guy who's feeling good. Jeez. And everyone's giving him praise for knocking out 41 push-ups.
So. Ike Feldman is a honest man. He's a man of integrity. And he was very good when he worked here at CBS Sports Radio. And he seemed to be like a very nice, friendly guy. You know, kind of about how people talk about you and how people like you around here. I don't think Ike would go out of his way just to be a douche. I think he was just being honest. He wanted to respect the system. He wanted to respect the hard work. But anyway, go ahead. Next one.
As many NFL coaches would say, the eye in the sky, don't lie.
And Ike Feldman is the eye in the sky, but okay, go ahead.
Let's keep the football talk going. Saquon Barkley was franchise tagged by the Giants earlier this offseason, and now the sixth year back is looking for some more assurances. Speaking at his charity's event over the weekend, he said he is deserving of a contract extension and isn't opposed to sitting out the 2023 season to prove a point if he does not get the deal he wants. Now, last year, Saquon accumulated 1,650 all-purpose yards and 10 touchdowns. Onsides or offsides, the Giants should give Saquon Barkley a contract extension.
Usually I wouldn't advocate giving big money to a running back, but I think there's a way to give him the guaranteed money that is fair, and then the rest of the contract really doesn't matter because it's just about when you get outs on it. But if you don't commit long-term to Saquon Barkley, this roster has a lot of work to do. Who really intimidates you that much on the offensive side of the ball? And you just paid Daniel Jones. I would not take away his best weapon. So you asked me the Giants should give Saquon Barkley a contract extension. I think they should find a way to get an okay deal, you know, a deal you have to give some guaranteed money, but it gives you an easy out if Saquon does get hurt again and then you don't feel great about him. But it also then makes Saquon happy because he gets guaranteed money. I think there's a deal to be made from now until July 17th, and I think the Giants will get a deal done, and they should want to get a deal done, so on sides.
For some reason, another team is reportedly interested in signing Kyrie Irving.
Hey.
Mark Stein is reporting that the Rockets would be interested in signing Kyrie this offseason if they cannot land James Harden. Now, we look at Kyrie's free agency. It's going to be a fascinating one, as obviously we have the Mavericks interested, seemingly now the Rockets interested. And oh yeah, by the way, there was leaks last year that the Mercurial Star, or last week, I should say, Mercurial Star contacted LeBron James about joining him and Luka in Dallas. Onsides or offsides? When it's all said and done, Kyrie Irving will be a member of the Dallas Mavericks next season.
Yeah, I think Dallas is desperate enough to do something stupid, because they got to bring somebody in or keep somebody to team up with Luka Doncic. And I don't know who else you're getting. LeBron's not going there. I don't think the Rockets will end up signing Kyrie. Maybe the Lakers if LeBron really pushes it, but I don't think that's their preference. So Kyrie will be a member of the Mavericks next season. I'll go on sides on that one.
And finally, former number two overall pick Chase Young could be on the move this offseason. Albert Breer reported that the Commanders aren't actively shopping the defensive end, but they are definitely listening to trade offers. Now, Washington declined Young's fifth-year option, meaning he will be a free agent after this season. Onsides or offsides? The Commanders should trade Chase Young this offseason.
I guess it depends what you're going to get, and on an expiring contract, I don't know how much you would get, even though I think a lot of people look at Chase Young and they say he has potential. Sometimes the motor gets called into question, but he's also been injured a bunch as well. At this point, with the upside that's there, I would let it ride and I would not trade him this, in this summer. So I would continue to keep him on the team. So you said to me the Commanders should trade Chase Young for the remainder of the offseason. I would say offside on that one.
Offsides.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. That is Onsides Offsides. We will take a break, and when we come on back, a lot to get into with the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers off to New York. Now he's saying it's the last 6 weeks are the most fun that he's had in a long time. How do Packers fans react to that? How does a Packers legend react to that? And also, what are the expectations heading into this season for the Green Bay Packers with Jordan Love as the starting quarterback? And I also want to know, too, with Green Bay, will Packers fans be rooting for Aaron Rodgers to succeed? Different conference, now in the AFC. You rooted for him forever. Will you be rooting for him to succeed with the New York Jets? We'll talk about all of that on the other side with a Green Bay Packers legend in Amon Green, who was running back for the team for a bunch of years and had a lot of success making four Pro Bowls, when the Zach Gelb Show does return in about 5 minutes.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, and you can think of O'Reilly Auto Parts for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in a former Green Bay Packer. He, of course, did make four Pro Bowls in his illustrious NFL career. He did play his college ball at Nebraska and was a third-round draft pick back in the 1998 NFL draft by the Seattle Seahawks, and that is Amon Green. Amon, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I'm been good, Zach. How you been?
Well, I've been fantastic. So I saw Aaron Rodgers say the other day, the former Packers quarterback, that the last 6 weeks have been the most fun that he's had in a while, and it's fun to come to work, and he's excited about what he's doing with the New York Jets. When you hear that and you know how it ended in Green Bay, are you at all disappointed that Rodgers said, oh, in 6 weeks, that's the most fun that he's had in a while?
No, I'm not, because he was a person that was in a place that was where he wasn't happy, and you knew that. You saw that in the interviews. You heard that in press conferences. You saw it in press conference. So I'm happy for him that he's in this spot, because at the end of the day, we're all humans. We're trying to find our niche in life to where we could feel comfortable with ourselves, comfortable around the people that we work with or that we're around every day, family, friends, coworkers, and so I'm very happy for him. I hope his health, I hope that calf gets better so he could be ready, get ready for training camp. So for all that, to hear that, that's music to my ears, because I know, and we all know, when he's healthy, when he's in the proper mind, he's a phenomenal quarterback, and he can help his team, help that New York Jets team win.
Do you view the Jets as a Super Bowl contender heading into the season?
I say going into the season, you know, everybody healthy. Defense will be the defense that it was last year. There is potential for them to be in the race for the Super Bowl.
I'm on Green here with us. Now, getting to your former team in the Green Bay Packers, we're all wondering what the Packers can be this year. When you view them, I know Love has been on the team the last few years, but this is his first time actually being the full-time starting quarterback from the get-go. What are your expectations for the Packers this year?
My expectations are, regardless of what David Bakhtiari is saying or not saying, I can't remember if he's saying rebuilding or not saying rebuilding, but I know that has been a conversation, a subject of conversation, but they are in that kind of space just a little bit because of Jordan taking over his first reign as the starting quarterback. So with that going ahead, and you got some veterans obviously on offense with the running backs, with the wide receiver core, young tight ends, but they are very talented, so I'm excited to see what they do. Offensive line is still there, and then defense has his returning starters like Rashard Gary coming from the ACL. So I'm super excited for them, but it's going to be a tough season because as a first-time starting quarterback for a team that has traditionally had previous great quarterbacks, it's just going to be that little lull. It's going to be a lull of learning how to process and be the quarterback that he needs to be for his teammates, learning the defenses and what they're going to throw at him from the guys in the division, the Vikings, Lions, and the Bears, to the teams outside the division in the AFC, NFC, other divisions. So that's going to be the learning process. And it's going to obviously be a whole season thing. He's going to have some good weeks. He's going to have some bad weeks. He's going to show – We're going to see, oh, he's a first-round draft pick, and we're going to see what's going on. But all in all, the biggest thing I hope Jordan does is make it a learning experience the whole path, because that's how he's going to get better towards the end of the season and then all into 2024.
I hate to say it, but it feels as if wins and losses for the Packers this year are kind of irrelevant, and it's just at the end of the year, Amon Green, do you have that feeling that Jordan Love can be the guy to lead the Packers into their next era?
100%. I 100% believe he can do that. He has the weapons. They draft, like I said, I love the tight ends, the two tight ends. They drafted one kid from North Dakota, one of the North Dakota schools, and the other kid, I can't think where he's from, but I know the talent. And so with that, building the team around him, where they already have, I mentioned the running backs, A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones, phenomenal guys. You got a starter in both of them. You know, if they went anywhere else, they'll be starting. If A.J. went somewhere else, he would do that. And the offensive line has been sometimes a focal point of discussion, but coming healthy right now, hopefully it can stay healthy. And that team of wide receivers, Watson, Dobbs, and then you have some of the younger guys that's going to fight for that, you know, third rotation. And, you know, you never know. Still wide receivers out there that's free agency that have not signed, like DeAndre Hopkins, you never know. Just putting it out there. But I think the team around him is enough to give him the support and to progress forward in his first year.
What advice would you give to Jordan Love? Like, if you were his teammate and you were kind of viewed as one of those elder statesmen in the locker room, what would you be saying to a young quarterback?
First thing is, look, man, don't let the mistakes put you down too much. You're going to make mistakes. That's how you get better, though. That's how all other quarterbacks on this team, the ones around the league that are Hall of Famers, they made mistakes. You know, I remember my rookie year, Peyton Manning, for the Indianapolis Colts, had 28 touchdowns and he had 28 interceptions, okay? So look at him now. So just using the mistakes as a learning experience, and don't look at it as a strike against your character, your ability, your athletic ability, any of that. Just look at it as, you know what? Tom Brady went through this. Aaron went through this. Brett went through this. Now it's my turn, but this is how I'm going to handle it so I can use it to get better. That's what I'll let him know.
And I also have to imagine there has to be a giant weight off his shoulder, because I know that, hey, it's a business. You got to be a professional. He's done that, but the last 3 years, no matter if it was portrayed that Rodgers and Love had a good relationship, that had to be awkward, with really the only way people wanted to talk to you was to see what you would say about your relationship with Aaron and what the heck was actually going on with some of the headlines that happened off the field.
Yeah, it is. It's an awkward situation, but that's where both players, Aaron and Jordan, are being professionals. being in that situation as the incumbent and then somebody who's already been in the job like Aaron and Jordan have been for the last previous seasons, three seasons, it's something to where you look at, for one, as this guy is my teammate, regardless of where I am in the totem pole. So we got to work together to support each other, learn things from one another, and to help us as a team and a unit to stay together. Because if you don't do that, if there is any type of superficial, any type of arguments or anything like that that comes to the surface, I mean, then, yeah, you'll have those issues. But for the most part, I saw and what I heard, you know, from my point of view, was all that. It was support for one another, love back and forth. So, you know, not a play on words there, but just saying that it was there. And so now I feel that Jordan is comfortable in this time right now to take over as number one QB.
And I was saying the last few weeks, it's easy to root for Jordan Love because he's handled everything the right way so far in what isn't 100%. An ideal situation. I have to imagine, as a player, like if you're a veteran in that locker room, you want to go to war for this guy with just the way that he handled himself the last few years.
Yes. I mean, yes. And then for being a young guy, that's where, for one, as me, if I'm sitting in the same running back room with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon right now, I'm like, man, we got to give this kid everything we got. You know, we got to make sure we do everything. When we get that ball, we run as hard as we can. When we have to block somebody, we block to the best of our ability. And anything else beyond that, if it's in the locker room stuff, in the weight room stuff, or just hanging out off-field stuff, just to get to know each other to where he can become comfortable. Because we know the quarterback position at the Green Bay Packers organization for the history has been very special. From Bart to, you know, even though from Bart to Brett, it was some different, you know, a transition a long time between quarterbacks. But then between Brett and Aaron now, it's been that for almost 40 years of great quarterbacks. So not to have that pressure on him to say he got to come in day one, year one, to make that difference. Hey, Brett wasn't great year one. Aaron wasn't either. They built their careers to where they got to that plateau of greatness. So letting them know that, giving them that weekly, daily, monthly, minute support of understanding that, look, yeah, it's going to be a little rough, but it's going to get better and better and easier. And then we're going to start having fun kicking butt in the NFC North.
Would it surprise you if they made the playoffs this year just because the NFC is not a strong conference right now? You look at the North, and a lot of people expect Minnesota to regress. We'll see if Detroit could take that next step, and the Bears still have some work to do. Is it crazy to say that this team will make the playoffs this year or could make the playoffs this year?
I'll say it's not crazy. It's always a chance. There's always a chance for a team. We don't know how the season's going to start. We don't know how it's going to end. It's a long NFL season. So you got 17 games now. So that gives time for teams that we saw in the first year of 17 games. Teams somehow use that extra game, you know, extra week to get better, to find themselves in a position to be in or out of the game of the playoff race. So it's a potential. I mean, I'm not saying it's crazy. I will say it's not crazy if the Packers make the playoffs this year.
Amon Green, get into the current state of the running back position. We just saw the Vikings release Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, and Josh Jacobs. I have franchise tags that they still haven't signed yet. They're looking to get long-term deals from the Giants and also the Las Vegas Raiders. How do you kind of look at the state of the running back position being a former back in this league?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate state, I believe. I believe teams, I don't know if it's coaches, I don't know if it's GMs, but they're looking at the running back position as an expendable position. When non-biased and just from an observer, but knowing the game, you've got to have the run game. You can't have a good run game, a good offense, without a good run game and a good pass game working together. If you think you can, that means you got Hall of Famers across the board at quarterback, wide receiver, and O-line. But you got to mix it up. That's a part of playing football. That was the origins of football way back 100 years ago, was the run game. A lot of wing tee, a lot of option, RPO, back then when it was black and white on the TV. So to go away from that, to try to make running backs less cost-effective for your budget or whatever, and you got guys that are fantastic running backs, as you mentioned, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley. Those guys are Pro Bowl guys. Those guys that keep defensive coordinators up at night worrying about how we're going to scheme and stop these guys. So I would advise Giants and whoever team wants to pick up Dalvin Cook, please do it fast. And it's a smart way to help your team out, to get a nice little shot in the arm to go into the 2023 season, because the running backs, even though, like you said, teams are not giving their just due to them, but they are still a real part of the game. And the teams that benefit from it, they'll know. You know, Ravens, 49ers, just to name a few. Those teams know because they've been doing it for a long time and doing it right. And then playoff contending, all in the same.
Yeah, I think the way that teams look at it now, I don't think teams say, hey, we don't need a run game, because everyone knows you need a run game. I just think the days of a bell cow back being needed to win a championship are kind of over, just with how many teams have won. And it kind of feels like it's running back by committee, and that's what teams are trying to emulate right now to cut costs elsewhere.
Yeah, you can do that from time to time, and I'll say you get lucky. That does happen. But if you have that bell cow running back, then you don't have to get lucky. You got a sure thing coming, and I'm a guy who's a sure thing. So I only bet on myself, or I only do things, if I was a GM or head coach, that are sure things. So if I got a guy that I know is a sure thing, I'm giving him his money that he deserves and making sure he's in my backfield to help my quarterback and my O-lineman and my wide receivers out.
If you were in a position like Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley, where the team, let's just say, doesn't want to give you a long-term deal and you have that franchise tag there, I know we saw Le'Veon Bell do this a few years ago. Would you think about sitting out for this upcoming season?
Potentially. Would it be my favorite option? No, because I want to keep playing. And we know when you're sitting out, the assumption is you're going to get out of shape, your timing's off, your speed's off, your strength is off. So, no, that's not preferably my first choice. But from a business standpoint, they got to send a message. If they do it, you know what? It's what they decide to do. That's their business decision to get where they feel they need to be with, in terms of contract negotiation.
Last thing I'll ask you, you talked about Dalvin Cook and where he could potentially wind up. I keep on circling back to the New York Jets. Wouldn't surprise me if Aaron Rodgers starts to advocate for Dalvin Cook.
Potentially. I mean, he knows. He played against them. They do have Bryce Hall coming back from the ACL, so, and he's still young, so he can heal fast and be back where he was. I was a guy in love with him until he had his ACL. I know he was well onto 1,000 yards in his rookie season, so I'm so excited about the Iowa State running back. So right now, I wouldn't be surprised. He's done it before. You know, he's always made a list of players that he said he's talked to, or, you know, mentioned to the GM or mentioned in an interview, something like that, and wouldn't be surprised if he did that.
I'm on Green. Always great to catch up with you. Thanks for making the time today.
Hey, Zach, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and I'll see you next time. Talk to you next time.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of BMW performance without a single piston or cylinder. A generation of all-electric vehicles designed and built like no other. The BMW iX, i7, and i4 revolutionize every drive into a thrilling opportunity to feel the pure rush of BMW 100% electric. But isn't that what you'd expect from the ultimate electric driving machine? Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Did you watch Sunday Night Baseball last night, Hickster, by any chance?
Just the last few innings. Caught the tail end.
So I watched actually all Sunday Night Baseball. I had nothing to do last night, and I got back to my apartment from the things I was doing on Sunday, on the earlier side than I expected. So I watched the entirety of Sunday Night Baseball. I still think Yankees-Red Sox means something. It still has juice to me. I get it. Like, I was talking to Will Middlebrooks during the game. We were exchanging some text messages. Sure, it's not, all right, like Don Zimmer against Pedro Martinez. It's not Manny Ramirez and Big Poppy up against Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and A-Rod and Bronson Arroyo. Like, it doesn't have that juice anymore, but I still feel as if, and I went to the game on Saturday night, I'm not a Yankee nor a Red Sox fan, and that really, the feel inside the stadium was still there. And I wanted to watch the game last night, so I was home, had nothing else to do, I ended up watching the game. You know what my biggest takeaway was from the game? It had nothing to do with the Yankees or the Red Sox. The broadcast booth stinks for Sunday Night Baseball. And Hickey's shaking his head right now in agreement with me. And that's not always the case. You know, Hickey is very tough to appease and get him to actually agree with you on something. Sometimes I feel like he's just agreeing to disagree with me. But you look at that Sunday Night Baseball booth, like David Cone's really good at the Yankee broadcast, but the chemistry or lack of it with Carl Ravitch, David Cone and Eduardo Perez is just non-existent. And I also feel as if they have to show them more in the booth. I feel like you just hear the voices, you never actually see them. And last night, I don't know whose idea it was. This ought to be the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Now, I know it may not be easy to get players mic'd up in games, and you just take whoever you can, because I do think it's good for the marketing of the game. But whoever's idea it was to mic up the Yankees catcher, Jose Trevino, was so stupid. First off, he has all this equipment on him, so you could barely hear him speaking to the microphone. And now with the pitch clock, it expedites the game. So it's not as if he has 35 seconds in between pitches to call the game and then also talk to the guys in the booth. And Carl Ravage, you know, I've given a lot of nicknames throughout the years, and I called him Robot Ravage. I think that may be the best nickname, because that guy is programmed like a robot, and he's one of those traditional broadcasters. Can you know how to break from the script? He was just asking 9,000 questions to Trevino, and Hickey, there were some times where Trevino would answer the question like two pitches later, and Ravage just wouldn't stop with the 9,000 questions. There were times he would ask the question, wouldn't get a response for 40 seconds, it seemed like. And he's still asking him a ton of questions. Eventually, you got to realize, oh, we got to bail out. This was an idea that we thought was good, and then it wasn't good. But that broadcast booth stinks. And last night, I'm sitting there saying, man, I know that's my childhood, so that's different. I always thought John Miller and Joe Morgan were a phenomenal booth. Ever since they broke up that booth of now the late, great Joe Morgan, and then, you know, John Miller still calling games. What has ESPN been doing in the Sunday Night Baseball booth? Hey, Dan Shulman was solid. Don't get me wrong. But the booth was never great. I actually like Matt Vasgersian and A-Rod more than others, but I wouldn't call it a great booth. But this booth that they have now has zero buzz. You know what? It seems so simple, and I know it's an ambiguous definition, but when you have a great booth, you know it's a great booth because whenever somebody tunes in, even if the game isn't big, it feels like a big game. Like if Mike Breen is calling a regular season NBA game a national game because he does the Knicks locally, it just feels like a big game. Anytime Kevin Harlan, he could call a game in January in basketball in the middle of the week, it feels like a big game. When Joe Buck called the baseball game for Fox, it felt like a big game. When you get Jim Nance in football, you know it's a big game. When you got Buck in football, you know it's a big game. Al Michaels. Right, the list goes on and on and on. When you listen to the Sunday Night Baseball booth, it's almost like, doesn't even feel like it's a big game. At times, it feels like it's a AAA broadcast. That booth is horrible, Hickey. It's abysmal.
I like Carl Ravage more than you do.
I like him in the studio.
Yes. It is. It does not feel like a big game, and you're right.
Or in the Little League World Series.
He is good in the Little League World Series. I give him credit there, absolutely. Like, Dan Shulman was a voice that I liked, that it felt like a big baseball game when he was calling the game, or even, you know, there's a lot of college basketball as well. Since he left, especially, it's been nowhere near the same, especially when you have now three guys in the booth. It's so hard to do if you don't have a lot of chemistry. Like, I don't really have an answer. Like,
it reminds me of like Tessitore, Whitten, and Booger
McFarland.
Were you just throwing three guys
terrible.
In a booth?
I hate complaining about something without having a solution. I don't have a solution for ESPN, but boy, oh boy, it is. You're right. The Sunday Night Baseball team is minor league.
I have a solution for you.
Okay.
You know how ESPN likes to pay people a lot of money and then make them wear multiple hats?
Joe Buck.
Get Joe Buck in the booth. He calls Monday Night Football. You can't have him do a bunch of Sunday Night Baseball games.
And ESPN, I think, has a few baseball games, but they're not doing the World Series like you used to do with Fox. So it's not like there should be a lot of conflict. Anyway.
And if he has to pick up some frequent flyer miles, Kenny Albert does it all the time. I'm being like, Kenny Albert, remember when the Rangers were in the Eastern Conference Final, he was doing the Rangers game locally, and then he was traveling out to the West Coast to call whatever Kings against whoever in the Western Conference Final. I don't want to hear it. You got paid a lot of money, Joe Buck. And I think baseball, even though it was Joe Buck's first love, at the end, he just sounded totally different during baseball compared to football. It seemed like there was a lot more energy for football than it was baseball, but probably the nature of the sport. Now with this pitch clock stuff, it's not a detriment to do baseball. You're asking paid a lot of money. Get Joe Buck in the booth.
Also, too, remember he used to do baseball, Thursday night football, and Sunday night football. So, like, there would be days where they would talk about the World Series, and he'd have, like, the World Series on Wednesday, Thursday night baseball or Thursday night football on, obviously, Thursday. Then the World Series on Friday. Then it's, like, another World Series game. Then he's doing the Sunday game. Then back to World Series for, like, that week and a half. He'd be at Fox and doing, like, all three games.
And for baseball, it only really conflicts for a month and a half. If that at most, you got September, a few games in September. And remember, it's just one game a week. And you're then doing the games for football on Monday.
Right. It's not like you have to worry about, oh, Sundays he's got games. No games on Sunday for Joe.
That's what I would do. You could do this. Get Eduardo Perez out of the booth. Get Carl Ravage out of the booth. Put him in the studio. Put him back in the studio. And you could do Buck and David Cone. Cone, I think, is good. Cone, I think, is solid in the booth. But if you need someone else... okay, but Buck is the starting point, getting Joe Buck back in the booth. That's what I would do if I was running Disney, but I'm not.
I think I did read something that he did say he misses baseball, Joe.
There you go.
So come on back home.
There you go. By the way, the Amon Green interview that we just did, the conversation that we had with him. Here's a question I have, because he said he's a former Packer, but he comes from a player perspective. He said he's happy for Aaron Rodgers. That it was clear Rodgers was annoyed with the organization towards the end. He wasn't happy. He sounded miserable. He looked miserable. All that stuff. He's not surprised by hearing Rodgers, oh, the last 6 weeks in New York is the most fun that I've had in a while. And he didn't find it to be disrespectful. I wonder how Green Bay Packers fans are going to act this year in terms of, will they actually be rooting for Aaron Rodgers? Because me being a Brady guy, I didn't want Brady to leave the Patriots. When Brady left the Patriots, I wasn't thrilled with it. And since I watched him for 20 years, now it's a different level. I know Rodgers is a Hall of Fame quarterback and all that. Brady won 6 Super Bowls. I'm not saying there's an emotional attachment that Packers fans have for Rodgers, but it pales in comparison to what Patriot fans had for Tom Brady. So I would watch the Buccaneers and I would root for Brady. Now, if the Patriots played the Bucs, which they didn't that first year, it wasn't until the second year, yeah, I wouldn't want the Buccaneers to win. I'm rooting for the Patriots, a Patriot fan first. But I would like to see, and I wanted to see Tom Brady do well. I wonder if that feeling is still there in a different situation for Packers fans, because Rodgers, for the last 2 years, you could tell, didn't want to be there. Like, you heard a lot about Brady. But until that last year, you didn't really hear Brady play along that, like, he didn't want to kind of be there with some of the speculation with the house on the market and all those other things. So with how ugly the divorce was, and Brady never really did speak negatively about the Patriots when he left, Rodgers already saying this is the happiest I've been in a long time. I wonder, Hickey, how Packers fans are going to approach this year if they'll be rooting for Aaron Rodgers. Because I think a great miscalculation that we do is that towards the end, a lot of Packers fans were fed up with Aaron Rodgers because they were just tired of the drama. I'm not saying all, I'm not saying they don't like the guy anymore, but I think there was a decent amount of fans who would call into this show and say, hey, I listened to you on one of the 4 stations that were carried on in the state of Wisconsin. I'm tired of Rodgers, and I just want this stuff to end.
And if it was me, I would have rooted for him if I'm a Packers fan. I'm not saying I'd root against him. I'm not saying I would, you know, root for him to go 0-17 and stink. But I wouldn't exactly be putting on my Jets green and white pom-poms.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying when you're watching the guy. Like, you're going to be watching the guy on a Sunday. It's impossible to avoid him. He's going to be on so many primetime games. Just emotionally, I'm not saying you have to go get a Jets jersey, a Rodgers Jet jersey, number 8 jersey. But when you're emotionally watching him, do you think there will be Packers fans that will be rooting for him?
Oh, definitely some, without a doubt. Majority, I would probably say, would be indifferent / not rooting for him.
Did you root for Peyton Manning when he left the Colts, got cut from the Colts, and ended up with the Denver Broncos?
Like, yes and no, if that makes sense. Like, really, in the playoffs, I did. I wanted to see him have success. But also, like, when he won the Super Bowl, I was more happy for him than he could ride off in the sunset. But it wasn't like I'm going up and down in my apartment going crazy that they just beat the Panthers. It was kind of weird, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I was happy for him. Also, I mean, not exactly thrilled that, again, that everyone now in Denver is trying to claim him as their own. But it wasn't like exactly I had an 18 orange and blue jersey rooting for him to kill it every week.
Full disclosure, I didn't have any Buccaneers gear, but I heavily bet Brady to win that Super Bowl up against Kansas City. I did bet some Gronk anytime touchdowns as well. He had two in the game. And just naturally from an emotional standpoint, it's not like I would have been devastated if they lost, but when Brady hit Gronk in the end zone in the Super Bowl to open things up, I was like, yeah! And I was fired up. I was. So I'm just curious. You may say one thing, but when you watch a game this year, when you watch Rodgers with the Jets after rooting for so many years with the Packers, how will Packers fans handle that? 855-212-4CBS.